5, 4, 3, 2.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your voice of reason, an independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, June 5th, 2007, Central Time in the good old United States. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio, because here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Now, on to our program. Good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. At other times, you may call area code 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We will try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and the two is a numerical two. Andy talks about current economic issues and also the state of our monetary system. Very important, critical for all of us to know and to understand. Good morning, everyone. Today we have a cacophony of things to discuss, mostly because I'm behind in my email, and we have a few loose ends before we get to our main subject of separation of church and state, which I think will cause a little bit of a fury, which I hope it does in a way, because we need to think. Even before I start, I was listening to watching television the other day, and every time I do, I get angry with myself because it's an incredible waste of time, with the exception of maybe very few programs in a very, very limited time span, during a very little time span. But I was listening to some of the popular talk radio hosts, and, you know, I just don't understand. They conjure up a premise, they run with it, they get emotional about it, and then it's like they want to make an appeal, you know, to the public, you know, for understanding and for them to get behind them 100% and to rile up their emotions. There is so little foundation for what they say. In most cases, what they say is absolutely incorrect. Most of it is warmongering and saber rattling, which I heartily disagree with. They make invalid premises, which just bug me. And I don't call in. First of all, I don't want to jostle with these people because it's worthless. In fact, I listened to Sean Hannity was one of them the other day. He was on the radio. And there was a senator. I didn't get the guy's name. I just caught the program at the very end. And the guy sounded logical. And I was really surprised. And Sean Hannity just kept on coming back with some inane comments. And every time he would make a comment of, you know, what as he perceived to be the facts from his position, he would just go off on a tangent and accusing him of, you know, being everything from a communist to everything else. You know, and you think to yourself, why doesn't this guy lose his audience altogether? Why don't we get fed up? But it seems that there's more and more people around today that eat up that stuff, and that's the only thing that they can digest. That's the only thing they can understand. Like one of my biking friends who really has a tough time thinking, you know, his answer to every world problem is, nuke 'em. You know, it's that type of mentality. In fact, one time we were talking about Japan, he said, "Nukem." I said, "Oh, we already did." He says, "Oh, you know, you're right." You know, he sort of felt like, "Oh, good, we did write the first at least once." You know, and it's kind of a sad situation, really a sad, and it annoys me. It's wrong, but yet we've adopted this type of mentality, you know, where we have the right to do whatever we want around the world because, you know, this we're an empire, but we're different. And if you would have been back in any empire, Macedonia, Greek, I don't care which one it was, they would have told you the same thing. Empires are wrong, they're bad, they're self-serving, and they subjugate the people, and they support dictators. It's been that way all along. And we are, in fact, to blame for a lot of troubles around the world. Hey, how you like that? How un-American could you get? We are the blame. We're the blame for Saddam Hussein. We're the blame for the problems that we have in the area of Persia, which we call now Iran. We put dictators in there. We had who brutalized the people with our support. And now the people don't like us for it, and we can't understand that. Anyway, it goes on and on. I can go on for hours just on that subject alone, and just let me leave that be. But I really think that we should voluntarily boycott all of that popular talk radio and TV, which I think is horrible for our minds. It's just it contaminates our minds, and if there's kids in the room, it's going to really contaminate them as well. And I'm going to talk about that as well a little bit more. Here's a piece of email. He says, "I'm now listening to your Amtrak show online." This is a couple of weeks ago, by the way. "I am very libertarian myself. Just 50 minutes ago, I got off an Amtrak trip from to New York City and North Carolina. I will listen with interest. I also sent your the wife your link. She was so annoyed with the trip. I am sure she will like to listen to your show. I have not heard anything more than your intro so far, but I could only imagine things so far. I am a Blog Talk Radio host also at blog www.blogtalkradio.com/Troy LaPlante. That's LTROYLAPLANTE. Well, Troy, thank you very much for writing. Thank you for listening in. There's not much more that I can say about my trip on Amtrak other than, and I think I'm sure I'm repeating myself, we have a broken system, and Amtrak is only a small part of that system. We have the conductor that we had when I was speaking to him about the operation of Amtrak, because I was curious about a few things. He did make mention that he was quite upset that they only received about $1 billion in subsidy last year. Well, here's a red-blooded American guy, right? Shouldn't he be saying that, my goodness gracious, why are we taking $1 billion forcibly from working people to pay for something that is highly regulated and has been highly regulated for over 100 years and doesn't provide the service that's intended? Now, that's what he should be saying. And he should be saying, why is it that in a free market society do we strap the taxpayers to do something, to pay for something that people don't want because we don't provide much service for it, much value for the money? No, his only complaint is, we only got about $1 billion. They cut us back. And let me tell you about cutbacks. This is very interesting. What happens is, let's say that there's $1 billion subsidy last year, and this year it's going to, someone proposes $1.2 billion, and I'm just making up those figures just for the sake of discussion. Well, somebody else, let's say it's a Democrat, and I'll just play along with me. It could be a Republican, one of the sides. And he says, oh, let's give $1.2 billion. And let's say somebody on the other side of the aisle, again, you take your pick, says, well, no, that's an excess. That's a 20% increase. We really should, you know, we can't even afford the billion, but if we're going to increase it, we could only really increase it 10%, let's say, to 1.1 billion, all right? So what one side does is, the one that proposed it originally said, you know, the other guys, whether they be Republicans or Democrats, makes no difference, is, you know, cut back funding for Amtrak. And I think that's abominable. That's they should be ashamed of themselves. What kind of Americans are they? Blah, blah, blah. And then everyone was like, oh, geez, you know, those people cut funding for Amtrak. where the other side, in fact, increased funding for Amtrak. Now, the sorrowful note is that everyone should be saying, why the hell are you funding Amtrak? It's a private entity. Why are you funding it? Don't fund the $1 billion. Give it to me. If I want to take Amtrak, I'll take Amtrak. I don't need the government to buy me a ticket every day. And that's basically what we do. Every day we buy a ticket on Amtrak, but we never take the train. And as a result of all the regulation, when you go there, you'll find that there's things that they don't do. And I didn't get into it, but I feel certain there's a lot of things they don't do because there's some regulation that goes back to 1904 or 1896 or 1840 or something that says the railroads are not permitted to do this, this, and that, because at one time they're basically a monopoly on transportation. Well, you think they would throw those regulations away? No. No, they persist, and all we do is now subsidize regulations that were written 100 years ago. My blood pressure just goes up. And I'll just give you an example. There's a beautiful station, absolutely gorgeous station in Oklahoma City where we had to take a bus to get there. There's a place to park, but it's not secure parking. So you put your car there and leave it there. It may not be there when you get back. So you better buy a $100 car, you know, from a used car lot somewhere. Hope it makes it to Oklahoma City. Leave it there, and you don't care if it's there when you get back. And that's the best way to do it. So you get on the train, and you get to the station, you realize the station is dark, dingy. It was raining when we got there, roof was leaking, and it's horrible. It's a beautiful station. I mean, it would cost over $1 million to build today, just the building alone, right? Beautiful. And it's vacant. Why don't they sublease it to Starbucks or someone like that? And the thing is, the station is the entryway to Bricktown in Oklahoma City, where they have all the restaurants and the bands and whatever. It's the entryway to it. It's got to be regulation. Anyway, so I hope, Troy, I hope we can see a change in this someday where we stop subsidizing all of the public transportation. Now, the reason why we subsidize Amtrak is because we subsidize the automobile. You say, how do we do that? Well, we pay taxes to the government, so the government can maintain, whether it be local, state, or federal, so they can maintain roads. So if we're already paying for the roads, we consider the roads free, which they're not. They cost us a hell of a lot of money. They should all be privatized. Every road should be privatized. And then we'll know which ones to take, how much to pay, and everything like that. And they'd be in better shape, and we'd get the government out of it. Then if we did that, we know we're paying for the road, and we'll know whether or not we want to pay for the train. We have equal footing. All right, enough of that. All right, here's another one. This one goes back also a couple of weeks. He says, I think of two instances where we could say that an entity other than the federal government is printing money, something that represents value. One, a store coupon. This is from Monty in Pennsylvania. Store coupons. I buy a brand of peanut butter, and the store gives me $1 off my bill. The piece of paper represented something of value worth a dollar. That's true, Monty. I'll buy that. And stocks. They are not currency, but they have a value that can be redeemed for dollars. I'm sure there are many others. I don't think I'm oversimplifying. Andy, I guess that's Andy Sutton from mytwocents.com. And his program, Beat the Street, I assume that's the person he's referring to, would know better. Well, the only problem I have, Monty, with that logic, you're absolutely correct, but then you could say anything is a medium of exchange. If you have anything that someone else perceives is value, you can barter it, and it would be currency. So you can take that, and there are barter companies out there, but you make a good point. Thank you for writing, and especially thank you for listening in. I didn't intend to do this, but while I was shaving this morning, I get up super early in the morning to get ready for my show. I feel I have to get dressed and all ready for work, or else I cannot speak over a microphone. I have in the little bathroom where I shave, I have and I purchased this from a vendor at a flea market, believe it or not, a $20 bill. And this goes back to what Andy Sutton and was talking about last week during our Sunday broadcast regarding our monetary system. And this dollar bill, this is a $20 bill, and in fact, I'm going to put this down for a second. I'm going to need a magnifying glass. Hold on, please. Here we are. I had one handy. Would you believe that? And this is a very unusual. This one was printed in 1926, I think it is. Yeah, 1926. And it says this on it. This certifies that there have been...
I'm back.
Finally, where'd you go? Uh-oh. Kansas?
That's here with the Queen.
Uh-oh. Geez, that came on my computer, and I guess it went over the air. I have no idea what that was. That was strange. All right. This certifies that there have been deposited in the Treasury of the United States of America $20 in gold coin payable to the bearer on command. Now, this is a $20 bill from, let's see if I can get the exact date. Yep, 1928, I'm sorry. It's a series of 1928, and it's called a gold certificate. Now, that was a regular $20 bill then. Now, just think, folks. Now, remember, this program is about liberty. It's not it doesn't talk about monetary issues and how to, you know, invest your money. It's about liberty. Back then, when you had $20, it was your $20, and you had your $20 worth of gold. The only thing that the Treasury did was hold the gold for you, you know, sort of in a deposit box. You could have issued the same $20 bill yourself, had $20 in storage somewhere, had someone certify it, you know, a third party certify that there are $20 in gold in here, and this certificate would be accepted if presented by the bearer. You understand what I'm saying? You say, that is liberty. That is, it's my gold, it's my $20, it just happens that the Treasury's holding on to it. There would be absolutely no difference that if I took this and put it and gave $20 worth of gold to a bank, to any institution that is recognized, whose signature is being recognized, so people can say, oh yeah, Bobby said he has a $20 in gold, where's Bobby type thing. But there would be an institution that would in fact certify that, and you had a slip of paper, a receipt, and basically it's a receipt for gold. And you would have went anywhere in the world, and they say, oh, this is a good receipt, we recognize the signature, and we recognize the validity of it, you know, it's stamped and the whole bit, and then a person can, you can give that person the $20 bill, which represented $20 in gold, in exchange for anything valued at $20, and then they go, and they can exchange it on demand. That's exactly what this was. Now, folks, we don't have any of that anymore. What we have are Federal Reserve notes. That means the paper is printed out of debt. They just print it and they say, okay, we have to issue a bond now because we got to pay for this debt. And it's issued out of debt. And now we're on $10 trillion worth of debt with nothing backing it up. And you see, that's why during the Depression, the one thing that became very valuable was money. In our next financial crisis, and folks, we're going to have another one. It may not be in my lifetime, but it always happens. Every country has them, no matter how well they plan. In fact, the more they plan, the more likely it is they're going to have a financial crisis. What happens? Things have value, and the dollar will be worthless. Okay, now, I want to talk a little bit about the separation of church and state. I need to get a little coffee here. It's early. And I'm going to take a real gamble this morning. I probably should not do this, but I am so sick and tired of listening to these politicians and their debates and their allegiance to God. I don't care if they have allegiance to God. That's not why I'm hiring them. That's not why I would vote for them. But they feel compelled to affirm and confirm their allegiance to a particular religion and then tell us, but it won't affect me being president. But I bring God with me. You know, this allegiance between church and state is so damn dangerous. You know, people in London now, what brought this up, by the way, is that people in London are so concerned today about the increase in the Muslim community. Now, remember, the Church of England, right, is the official church of the state. And people are taxed to support the church. No one goes to church, but it is the official church of the state. Now they're getting really nervous because the Islamic community is increasing. Now, I am no more for the Islamic community, the Islamic religion, as I am for the Church of England, the Anglican Church. I discard both of them in my own opinion. They're both absolutely worthless in my opinion. I'll be very honest with you. I think they do more harm than good. But my point being is this. If there was no connection, none whatsoever, between the connection between church and state, what difference would it make if they were people of the Islamic faith? First of all, we wouldn't know it because it would be private. You know, it wouldn't be an issue, and we would probably overlook it because it wouldn't make any difference. What difference does it make if the person who moves in next door to me is a Presbyterian, a Jew, it makes no difference to me. We never look at the human side, and these politicians never look at the human side. And what I saw the other day is something interesting. It's an atheist prayer. I know people are going to write in and get all upset about this, but it's very interesting because it says something. It tells us what the politicians should be saying, and especially our president. You know, with his born-again bullcrap. All right, here it is. It says, this is an atheist prayer. It says, let us remember our brotherhood with others as we hear this prayer, which is addressed to us. Addressed to us. That's what Paul says, us, you know, rather than our gods, in plural gods, because there's thousands and thousands of religions. Let us rise each morning and strive each day to do only that which brings happiness and joy to others, and avoid doing things that cause others hurt and pain. Now, folks, just that alone, if that was our prayer, if our president said that, what would he be saying? He'd be saying that this war in Iraq is wrong, wouldn't he? All right, and I'm going to come back to that in a second. Let us use our minds and our reason to force the behavior based on the mutuality and reciprocity inherent in human relationships, and let us always respect the dignity and worth of each other. And let us, above all, love one another, not to obtain rewards for ourselves now or hereafter, or avoid punishment, but rather always to bring each other contentment and peace. So be it. I thought that was so beautiful and says exactly what these bums running for office should be saying. But no, what they say is that, you know, I have an allegiance to God. God will be on my side in every decision. And when they say that, I have something to say about that also. And listen to this, and I'll bring this. This is, by the way, this is from a magazine called... I read so much stuff, I go... I tell you, my eyes are getting bad. It's called the Secular Humanist Bulletin, whatever edition it is. It's the most current edition, and there's no date on it. Yes, of summer, volume 23, number 2, summer 2007. And it says, it is an important battle with implications for the future of civilization and of all mankind, because at the same time that the Christian fundamentalists have been rising to power in the West, the Islamic fundamentalists have been riding an equally meteoric wave of their own in the Middle East. If the religionists have their way and are able to impose their primitive thinking on the rest of mankind, the consequences could be disastrous. The destructive capability of weaponry today is thousands of times greater than what it was in the Dark Ages, the time before the Enlightenment, when these two primitive worldviews were at war. So these culture wars, because they comprise a battle between the forces of reason and the forces of irrationality, are quite possibly a battle for the very survival of our species, with irrational religious leaders in command of such awesome power, it could easily result in the annihilation of mankind. And, you know, that's not scare tactics. I mean, that just makes damn sense. I know there are a lot of people out there, and, you know, libertarians and otherwise, who are very devout to their religion. But I quote, folks, I just don't get it. I was brought up as a Catholic, and as I got old, and I didn't have any epiphany or anything like that, but I just started asking questions, and the more questions I started asking, the fewer answers that I received. And after a while, I said, you know, there's something wrong with this. Why can't anyone answer any of my questions regarding religion? Until I realized, you know, it's bunk. You know, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of religions out there. Now, people say, well, Joe, if you don't belong to a religion or believe in religion, you know, do you believe in God? I said, I don't even know what the concept of God is. As a human being, I am incapable of grasping even that concept of God. There may be some force that, call it God or whatever, you know, that created all this. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that. I mean, I don't have the capabilities of understanding that. I cannot conceive of infinity. If I can't perceive infinity, how can I perceive the concept of a God? So we make these human manifestations, whether it be Buddha, whether it be Mohammed, whether it be Christ, whatever it is. And there are thousands and thousands. And I read an article that was very interesting once. It said this. It said, you know, the difference between an atheist and someone who believes very strongly in their own religion, they're very, very close. They don't realize how closely aligned they are. And here's the logic. You know, there are, let's say, 10,000 religions around the world. Now, that one person believes in one religion and doesn't believe in the other 10,000. The atheist doesn't believe in that one 10,000, neither the one that person believes in. So they're very, very close. You see my point? They're saying if my religion is the only true religion and every one of the 10,000 religions say that our religion is the only true religion, there's got to be something wrong with that logic. And that's all irrational. The whole situation is irrational. Now, I have friends that are very religious and they're very nice people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against people who are religious. But people who are religious are against people who are not. And that's a problem. And the politicians know that. And the way they use that is when they're on the bully pulpit or on the campaign trail. And they use that against everyone else to reassure the populace that, oh, don't worry, I'm a God-fearing person. In other words, I will kill someone in the name of God to protect my religion. Don't worry about that, you know. And I will go, there is absolutely no limit that I will go to protect the religion that I believe in. I mean, because if I die, I'm going to go to heaven because I'm protecting my religion. So I will sacrifice everybody. I will sacrifice the entire United States, you know, for my imaginary God, whoever that may be. And depending on what Christian religion that person is, it'll be a different God altogether. You know, to me, that extremism, that absolutism, it just absolutely bothers me. And that's why it is so critical for our freedom. For a person to say, if I believe, that's my business. If I don't believe, it is my business. That should not be a condition for office. And what does our Constitution say? It says, we the people, right? It says, but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now you say, well, they didn't violate that. They sure do when they campaign on that way. They're saying this God, that God, you know, my God, you know, they're promoting a religion. And then people say, well, I don't think I'll vote for Mitt Romney because, you know, he's a Mormon and I don't like that. I don't like his God. That's what we're saying. And we should stop saying that. I don't care what he believes in. I do care whether or not, if he read this atheist prayer, whether or not he would agree with it. That's what I want. That should be the test for office. The test for office, folks, should be, let us above all love one another, not to obtain rewards for ourselves now or hereafter or to avoid punishment, but rather always to bring each other contentment and peace, so be it. I want to know if they believe that, and if they don't, they should be damned. I don't care, and I don't know what manner. And I'd like for each one of them to say we should strive each day not only to bring happiness and joy to others, but to avoid doing things that won't hurt other people. They don't do that. They legislate things and hurts other people. They force people to pay taxes to support an Amtrak that doesn't work. That's hurting other people. You want to know something? I don't think there's very few politicians out there that match up to that atheist prayer. Not one. I'll bet you there's not one that subscribes to it. But they'll say, God's on my side, and if you don't believe me, I'll punch the hell out of you until you believe me. I think there's a real problem, and the separation of church and state must be the way it is. Well, folks, you know, geez, it's over 30 minutes, and we're out of time. Okay, well, we're going to conclude this program, and next Sunday night, we are going to have, and I'm not going to apologize to my religious friends, because I'm not mad at them, and I'm not saying that you're wrong, you're a bad person or anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, we should stop talking about it in the political arena. Just get out of it. Whatever it is, it is. Let the people be what they want to be. Very simple. Just let them be. And then if you're so damn religious and God is so important to you, stop killing other people. Stop stealing money from other people. Stop legislating. Stop pork barreling. Stop lying to the people. Stop lying. They won't do that. But they have God on their side, so we must vote for them. And it just pisses me off. I think if anyone said that, you know, I don't believe any of this crap that you have all these people with these funny hats and funny robes walking around saying mumbo jumbo make absolutely no sense. I don't believe in that crap. I mean, the person wouldn't get 10 votes in America. And we should stand up and applaud that person. Okay. Wow. Boy, I got riled up, didn't I? That's not very good, because I bet you my blood pressure is bad. But this really grabs me. This really, really grabs me. I'm just, every time I hear these clowns, and I say clowns, and I mean clowns, talk about what my religion is important to me. If your religion is important to you, you're an idiot. And not so much you're an idiot, but you're not thinking. You're not a critical thinker, and you don't care about others, because all religions say is that if you do this, this, and that, you will go to heaven. You will be rewarded in the hereafter, you know, at the expense of everybody else. And you're not doing it because you're a good person. You're doing it because you're going to go to heaven. Just like the Islamic terrorist said, well, I'm going to die, but I'm going to be in heaven with 72 virgins. And I bet you they're still all virgins, by the way. Okay. Enough ranting. I'll probably get in a lot of trouble, get a lot of hate mail, but I hope I do. I would like to answer it. All right. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, folks, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Let me hear from you, please. All right? If you're listening to this program, let me hear from you. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.